Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Well, actually, I believe it was big swinging dicks. So there was obviously an overexcited imagination on the part of some, I would suggest.
Because if he wants to know what misogyny looks like in modern Australia, he doesn't need a motion in the House of Representatives. He needs a mirror.
I love the mansplaining. I'm enjoying it.
What's mansplaining, Senator?
Welcome to In the House and In the Senate. I'm Alicia Aiken-Radburn, and we're talking to women in Australian politics about who they are, what they do, and why it matters. Dr. Helen Haynes has been the independent member for Indi since the 2019 federal election. Her electorate encompasses places like Wodonga, Wangaratta, and the lovely Falls Creek in regional Victoria. Dr. Haynes has a medical background, which began with nursing before she moved on to a master's degree in epidemiology and public health at UNSW, before casually completing a doctoral degree in medical science in Stockholm. Dr. Haynes is the first independent in Australian history to succeed another independent in a federal seat. Rather than a political party, she was endorsed by a community organisation, Voice for Indi, as a potential successor to incumbent MP Cathy McGowan. McGowan had been the member for Indi since 2013, and her winning the seat of Indi from Sophie Mirabella and then retaining it was a huge shake-up for the major parties. Indi was previously considered a conservative stronghold, but fast forward to 2019, independent Cathy McGowan was endorsing another independent, Dr. Helen Haynes, to campaign for the seat. Dr. Haynes campaigned strongly on increasing Newstart, now JobSeeker, climate change and rural health services. She won the seat and she has been advocating in Parliament ever since. Thanks so much for joining me today, Dr. Haynes. I just really want to dive straight into it. What's your day been like today? What's a day in the life of a parliamentarian like?
Okay, well, today's a bit of an unusual one. I try every now and then to put in the calendar working from home day. And like, this is a concept, pre-COVID concept, right?
Yes.
You know, we used to think that working from home was a special treat. But anyway, given that we have been back in the office for a little while here, I did think today, because I've had a lot of time on the road, been really, really busy in the car, and I thought, okay, I don't really want to go anywhere today, so I'll work from home. But it hasn't kind of worked out that way. I've found myself in my parliamentary office quite a lot, but I'm back in my lounge room now. But essentially, today starts like pretty much every other day, and that's I start with checking the media, and my media advisor summarizes a whole lot of relevant media for me and puts it in a WhatsApp app channel. And it's really it's pretty funny actually, because when you are a parliamentarian, one of the things apart from what's going on in the world is you're looking for newspaper articles that have picked up on the work that I might be doing. So
of
I'm
course.
Looking for my own name.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anything that is referencing me and the work that I'm doing or my electorate will be in that media feed, but more broadly key issues, of course, they're there. Because at any stage in the morning the phone could ring and it could be someone from the media actually asking for a comment. So it's really important to run my eyes over the key events that have come through in the press that morning. So it starts with that. And then do you want me to go through kind of piece
yeah,
by piece?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's go blow by
blow.
Yeah,
let's do it. Righto. So I've got this routine in my office that every morning the whole team, because we're spread across a couple of sites, I've got a really big electorate by Victorian standards. Indi is 29,000 square kilometres and it stretches from King Lake in the south, which is really Yeah, almost peri-urban Melbourne, right through to the Murray River, to Corryong, Tintaldra, all the alpine areas, right up the eastern side of the Hume Highway, essentially. And so I have an office in Canberra, an office in Wodonga, and one in Wangaratta. So I've got staff spread across those three places. So we start, we have 15 minutes, what we call a whip, and for any of the political nerds listening to your podcast, they'll know that in parliamentary life, people get whipped. Essentially, there's someone in charge on one side of the, each side of the house, and they, you know, delegate who's going to speak when and so on. So we have this thing we call the whip, and it's 15 minutes, and we go around the team, and essentially you talk about the top three things that you're wanting to get done today. So we do that, we check in with each other like that, and then everyone goes about their work. For me today, I've had multiple constituent telephone calls, so people I'm catching up with, some of them to deliver really good news that funding grants they've applied for, they've received. Some of them to unpack some issues that they've raised with me. So today I was talking about fuel supply with one of my constituents. I was talking to another one around bushfire recovery, talking to another one around a Victorian state government budget announcement that really was brilliant news for her work. I've done another podcast with someone else today, talking about the local power plan and my renewable energy policy. And I've had a haircut because...
Oh, it looks great.
And I've been preparing some speech notes because this evening I'm heading down to the town of Euroa to talk to a Rotary group. So
amazing. So you've just got a little bit on your plate then.
Well, I guess the other thing that's really important in that is next week we're back in Parliament. So I met with my parliamentary team and we were talking through the schedule for next week. So planning what speeches I would be making, thinking about the legislation that would be before the House, what ministers I'm meeting and who else I'll be meeting with in Canberra. So prep for next week as well. Yeah.
You mentioned your media monitoring. What are those media items that you are tracking at the moment? What's on the top of your to-do list, I guess?
Yeah. Well, I guess fundamentally, like every other thinking person in the nation, I'm constantly keeping abreast of the pandemic and from Australia's perspective, very much looking at vaccine rollout, and there's been some interesting propositions put by the Prime Minister in the last 24 hours about the idea of vaccine passports, which was something that was right way off, you know, was never going to happen a year ago, and he's talking about that now, and he's talking about that in terms of not just passports to travel abroad, but interstate vaccine passports. So I represent a border community. Wodonga is, of course, on the border. It's a twin city with Albury, and we had 168 days last year of the border being closed, and that created a world of pain for us. So the notion of the Prime Minister out of nowhere saying that we may need a passport to cross our own border when people live on one side and work on the other. So, you know, that's thrown the cat amongst the pigeons, truly. So I've been looking in that for the media. I'm always looking, of course, for it's, you know, it's been budget last week. So unpacking reactions to the budget, the announcement that the government are going to fund to the tune of $600 million, the gas plant in the Hunter Valley. I've been reading about that for more detail.
What do you think of that? I know you've previously advocated really hard on climate change and renewables. From your perspective in Indi, what do you think of that announcement? And how do you feel about how the government is on climate policy at the moment?
Yeah, so Alicia, I think the idea of the government investing, and I'm using that term generously, $600 million of taxpayer money into a gas plant flies in the face of all the best evidence in the world, and it flies in the face of any advice coming from business. it's a bad idea. It's not an idea that is supported by people who are genuinely trying to find ways for regional Australians in places such as the Hunter Valley to transition from coal into other industries. So, again, it was the worst kept secret, I guess, around that was what the government was going to do. They held off making that announcement until this week. But there are other ways that we can transition to renewable energy in regional Australia and bring regional Australians along with us to make sure that their livelihoods are enhanced, not ruined. So I've done a lot of work, as you may know, with regional communities on ways that the money that's generated from large-scale solar and wind and hydrogen, in fact, can flow back into regional communities. And I've got legislation before the Parliament right now, the Australian Local Power Agency, which is really about scaling up community ownership of renewable energy. So I'm not in any way part of the cheer squad for Minister Taylor's announcement. I think it's a very bad idea.
It's a really tricky area, Helen. I think there's a damaging stereotype that coal miners or people who work in non-renewable industries are Luddites and opposed to new technologies. It's a complex area, and these people have genuine anxieties about losing their jobs in industries they've worked in their whole lives. So what do you think that the transition looks like for workers, and what does that look like in Indi?
Well, first up, I want to say that there are no coal mines in Indi, so I don't have constituents who are coming to me with real concerns about where they or their family members might be working into the future. So I really want to acknowledge that, that if someone is working in an industry such as coal, then their fears for the future are legitimate, because mm-hmm. the writing is clearly on the wall that the world is exiting from fossil fuels. So the key thing to do here is to ensure that we have really honest conversations with people affected by this transition, and that we look for ways to invest in new industries in their geographical location. Now, I think in many ways that is partially what the government is trying to achieve through their $600 million gas plant. But the reality of that is that there's hardly any jobs that go with it. So it's the truth is that that's actually not going to solve that problem. What we do know with the construction of wind and solar is that there are many jobs associated with that kind of project. And we know that if we get our policy levers right, that many people in the communities where those renewable energy projects are established can benefit from that. If we take Germany, for example, 10% of all renewable energy that's generated in Germany is owned by local farmers. An additional 30% is owned by local communities. So small towns own their own renewable energy plants. So there's real ways we can do this. You know, we don't have to reinvent the wheel here. There's really good ways we can do this. And the local power plan work that I did, which was policy co-design with regional communities from all around Australia, I had 100 submissions into a discussion paper about that. I had local people from Indi, 15 of them, on an expert panel. They came to Parliament to see that legislation read into the House of Representatives. The National Farmers Federation have backed in that bill, saying this is exactly the kind of policy we need to transition regional Australia into a renewables future. I mean, right now, 25% of all our energy is coming from renewables. Within the next 50 years, it will be close to 100%. So I think it's really unfair if government try to pretend that it's going to be something else and prop up something like gas, which ultimately will be a stranded asset. It's not good use of taxpayers' money, and it really does not solve that existential issue for people in the coal mining industry.
Well, I think a lot of young people listening to this podcast would be very happy to have your voice in Parliament advocating for that transition and advocating for renewables. Just taking you back to where it all started, I'm really interested in what got you initially involved in politics and what your path of running to run for office looked like. Now, you were endorsed by, rather than a political party, by a community organisation, Voices for Indi. Helen, would you be able to tell me a little bit about that process? How did you become involved in Voices for Indi? What was your relationship like with your predecessor, Cathy McGowan? And yeah, because I've read somewhere that you described your campaign as basically a fete. It was like a community event. And as someone who's been very involved in a political party, I can't tell you that many of the campaigns that I've been involved in were necessarily a community event. There were a lot of hard work, which I imagine yours was as well.
Yeah, well, Alicia, you know that if you're going to run for parliament and if you're going to succeed, that it takes thousands of hours of really hard work to make that happen. You've got to convince a lot of people to vote for you, and you can't do that from the comfort of your lounge room with a cup of tea. You've got to be out on the ground. You've got to be knocking on doors. You've got to be getting in front of people and giving them an opportunity to get to know you a little bit and decide whether, in fact, you're a reasonable person. But I guess how did I get involved? Well, firstly, I can say that I've spent 35 years working in healthcare, and I had no political ambitions for myself at all. But within any job that we're in, there's politics no matter what. And in healthcare, the politics of health are quite stark. I mean, we have limited resources to deliver really expensive care to a huge number of people, and working out how to do that and working out the division of what gets funded and what doesn't is, of course, a political exercise. So I've been more than aware for a very long time that the impact of policy and decisions made at federal and state level have a very real impact on people's lived experience. So, you know, there's been times that I've been throwing things at the television because of political decisions or you know, the narratives I hear from politicians. I think, I would get angry about that. So in that regard, I was always a consumer of politics in the news and in my own, I guess, deliberations in my job. But in Indi, you know, we're a great big regional electorate, and we've been an electorate that's been represented by the Liberal Party for decades prior to 2013. And it was around 2012, I think it was 2012, was the apology to the Stolen Generation. And our Member of Parliament, our representative in the House, did not attend that apology. And I felt really, really angry about that, really let down. I felt that that our electorate wasn't seen in a good light, that our voices weren't being heard in the federal arena, and I was really unhappy with the level of our representation. But I was still kind of sat on my hands about that. But fortunately, 12 other people did not sit on their hands. 12 other people got together and started what became a great big community conversation, and they formed the group Voices for Indi, or it was known as Voice for Indi in those days. And famously, they established kitchen table conversations, so put out across the electorate, really through interpersonal networks, getting people together with a list of questions, asking things like, what do you love about the electorate? What do you think could be better? What do you want to see in a federal representative? What kind of values are important to you? And they formulated all of those responses, and it was a real snowballing effect. People passed it on and passed it on, and then they brought them all together, wrote a report and took it to our then Member of Parliament and said, look, this is what the electorate's saying. We'd really like you to respond to it. And famously she said, the people of Indi are not interested in politics. Well, history shows that, in fact, we were. And, of course, in 2013, Cathy McGowan was elected as federal independent, the only Liberal seat in that election to fall, and first time an independent in Indi. Huge news, won by 436 votes. It was extraordinary. And I knew Cathy, and I was campaigning for her, as were all members of my family. we got really involved with that. And that was the first time I'd ever handed out how to vote cards, first time I'd ever been door knocking, first time I ever wore a political T-shirt. And I wasn't alone, you know, around 900 other people, first time they'd ever done that. And so it was exciting. And when Kathy then went on to be a great Member of Parliament, I volunteered again for her, went to Canberra and in her office, saw what the job was like. And then when she indicated she was going to retire, I was constantly saying to people, well, who's going to replace Kathy? We can't just hand this back to the major parties. And eventually a few people started to say to me, well, what do you mean, who's going to do it? Why don't you put up your hand? You know, that same old thing, if not me, who? So, again, we needed to determine as a community how we were going to work this all out. And Voices for Indi, essentially their main vision is around participation in democracy. So in between elections, they're pretty quiet. They do workshops assisting people to have a voice and to join in. So they then decided, well, how can we find a way to put forward someone else that the community might want to get behind? In true kind of Indi style, they called a town hall meeting. We could only fit 250 people in the room, and there was essentially a deliberative forum happened. And if you were interested in getting the support to be a community independent, then you needed to apply. And there were three people who did, and we each presented to that group. And then over the course of an entire day from 9 till 4, that whole group had to reach 100% consensus.
Wow.
About what person they wanted to put forward or invite to run. So, yeah, that's how we did it. And, well, you know, I went into the process thinking, I don't care if it's not me, actually. I'd kind of be relieved if it wasn't. But if I'm going to put myself forward, I'm 100% in if they ask me to do it.
Was that day where, you know, you're presenting, it's 8 to 4, we're coming to 100% consensus, was it, was there any conflict whatsoever, or was it fairly relaxed? It sounds like the way to do things.
Well, it was pretty intense. It wasn't relaxed. It was really intense, but it was really respectful. And that's, you know, again, that's what we're on about in Indi. You need to be informed. You need to work with the evidence. You need to be inclusive. You need to listen to other people, not attack them. And that was, again, the way this was done, that there should be no losers from this process. And, in fact, you know, part of the process was that at any stage, any of the candidates could say, you know what, I actually think, you know, Roberta would be better than me. You know, I think her answers are better, so I'm going to dip out now. And you know, that did happen actually until we finally got to consensus. And we got to about 99% consensus. There was one person left who wasn't quite sure, and then she stepped forward and she said, look, there's one more question I need to ask before I can be certain that I could throw all my support behind Helen. And I can't recall what the question was, to be truthful, but she asked the question and I gave the answer, and she said, yeah, I'm happy now. And Alicia, I guess the proof that this worked was when Kathy first started, there were 600 signed up volunteers in 2013. When I ran in 2019, Kathy had grown that to 900 in 2016. By 2019, we had 1,700 community members who pulled on an orange T-shirt and got out on the ground and helped win this election.
It's just an immense community organising effort. And I think that it sounds like a bit of a nirvana, to be honest. I'm sure there are a lot of people in a lot of electorates around Australia who listen to that experience and just think that the optimism of it, it really juxtaposes with the cynicism that I think permeates the major parties, both internally sometimes, but also, you know, the Australian public doesn't really seem to be major fans of the major parties. What's your thinking around Labor and Liberal?
Yeah, look, I think it's unfortunate in Australia that we've kind of come to this point where everyday people see politics as either Labor or Liberal. I think that we'd have a lot more to gain as a society if we were much more diverse in our representation. So, of course, I'm going to say that as an independent, but I truly believe that if we have a bigger crossbench with people there that don't come from a major party background, who are not beholden to a major party line, who can directly interrogate every piece of legislation on its merits and in regard to how it impacts the people they represent, then I think, and that if they come forward with an attitude of really contributing to public policy in an optimistic and a constructive way, and that's really where I come at this. So for me, I love being an independent on the crossbench. It means that I can work with government, whoever they are, irrespective of what party they may be. But I'm not a cheerleader for government, nor am I just a straight-up critic. I'm there to actually work well with them if I can, and to come forward with good policy ideas myself. That's how I see it. And there's been plenty of times in Parliament where I've given the government an absolute beating in my speech, or because I think whatever they were proposing is really bad. There's other times where I think they've had some good things to do. And again, I would, applaud that when it happens. So, I would love to see us be a little more like some of our European parliaments, where there is a more shared power. But power is the word, isn't it, Alicia? This is it. Mainstream Australian political parties do not want to share power.
Well, talking about power, I think some of the questions that I receive when I put out questions to my audience about what they want to know from politicians, a lot of their questions revolve around power. And I think it's interesting to have you as an independent MP. How do you feel? Do you feel like you can effectively exercise power as an independent? Do you feel like those policy ideas that initially drew you to Parliament, do you feel like you've actually been able to translate and have, like, what are you proud of achieving so far?
Well, the answer is yes. I feel like I have plenty of influence. I think it's really interesting when you sit on the crossbench as an independent. Both sides of the aisle want to talk to you, particularly given that the government right now has only a one-seat majority in the House of Representatives. So it's very, very tight, Alicia. It really is. I think in terms of what I'm most proud of is, number one, I'm most proud that I've to the best of my ability, I've stuck to the values that I said I would. And that I've tried in all of my deliberations, both in Parliament and out in the electorate, to come forward with hope and optimism and a positive contribution, and to listen to as many people as I possibly can. I think one piece of legislation, and I mentioned it before when we were talking about the Hunter, is the Australian Local Power Agency Bill and the work that I've done on community energy, because for me, I'm not the one really prosecuting my ideas. My job is to prosecute the ideas and the policy platforms of the electorate. And when they came to me with community energy and said, really, if we had the right levers, we could scale this up. I then worked with them throughout the lockdown last winter, through those lockdowns, and put together a discussion paper, put that out to the universe. We had 100 submissions from all over Australia on that. I then ran a series of online workshops, and we put together a really comprehensive policy document, had it fully costed through the Parliamentary Budget Office, and then wrote the legislation that would enable that policy to actually come to life. Took that to the House of Representatives. The community were with me there in the gallery from that expert panel that day, saw that read into the Parliament, came with me to the press conference, had something to say in the press conference, and now that piece of legislation, after a fair bit of lobbying, I've got to say, but I've finally got it to a parliamentary inquiry. So that will be examined at that level. More submissions can come in at that time. And I've had really great feedback from parliamentarians of all backgrounds about this. I'm really optimistic about that bill. I'd love to see the government take that on. I don't think it's particularly political. I think it's solid public policy, and it's really about regional development. So So I'm really proud of the way the community worked with me right from the conception of the idea through to developing it into something really robust and then into the legislation. So super pleased about that. And, of course, you know, there's more to winning than just getting the money often. It's about creating a great big national conversation as well, and I feel like I've achieved that. Only recently, after lots of encouragement initially, powerful lobby group, the National Farmers Federation, traditionally seen as being very conservative, have backed me in 100% on the local power plan. Only today they were giving a presentation at the Renewable Energy Zone conference, and they talked about the Australian Local Power Agency and Helen Haynes's bill. So, you know, that's pretty cool. I'm really happy about that. Happy to bring people along with me, not to create people in corners, but to bring us to a point where we can actually make really good stuff happen.
That is awesome. Taking you to another national conversation this year. Obviously, we've seen so much emerge, everything from microaggressions around the treatment of women in Parliament to big allegations of sexual harassment and assault and generally unsavoury behaviour in Parliament. What have you thought as a parliamentarian watching all of that unfold?
I guess you could just hear me sigh.
Yes, so many women. I think it's a shared sigh.
Yeah. You know, I'm 59, and the fact that this stuff still happens it could make you despair, really. And there's moments where, like many women, I just feel exhausted by it. But I'm very mindful that I'm in a position of enormous privilege now, so I have a platform and I can use it. And for me, what unfolded in Parliament House, you know, in the house where the laws are actually made, and sometimes people forget that, like we're the lawmakers, and good grief, the revelations from Brittany Higgins and from so many other young women in the House of Representatives was just truly appalling. So for me, I had to think about, well, what can you do now, Helen? So straight away, my perspective was to join with my crossbench colleagues right to the Prime Minister, very strongly push for an independent inquiry and very strongly push for the Human Rights Commission to get involved at this point. And, you know, other people did that, of course, too. The opposition did that as well. And that's what's taking place now. So that's good. I certainly joined with women on the March for Justice and stood beside them. But I guess, you know, these are all small steps, really, to what is an enormous problem. And I guess, again, part of what I feel I can do as an MP is to try to ensure that we have the right amount of policy and funding that will address the structural issues that hold women back in terms of gender equality more broadly. It's not until, you know, I know I'm speaking to the converted here, but, you know, like it's not until men and women are actually structurally equal in the eyes of the law and in workplace relations, in parenting, in salary equity, that we can move beyond this issue of some people feeling like they can treat or can objectify women or get away with a crime as seriously alleged as rape in the workplace. You know, we've got a long way to go, Alicia, but I really want to be part of the solution.
I think you're so right in talking about how there is that just is so it feels insurmountable, and there are so many layers to it. Like just simply, I'm not. I'm going to be careful what I say here, but I'm not thinking about having a baby tomorrow. But you know, that's probably the next chapter of my life, and one of the things that just stood out like a sore thumb to me when I was reading things. I was actually on the Centrelink website, and I realized for the first time that men can't receive Centrelink benefits for paid parental leave. And that just seemed to me, I saw this amazing woman on Q&A who said, we will only experience true equality when an employer is as angry and fearful of she was amazing, a rock star. But, you know, these things litter our society. So it is I feel quite a lot of comfort in the fact knowing that we have such a considered, articulate woman in Parliament advocating on these issues. On that, you are, like, that's what's struck me about this conversation the most. You are so articulate and strong. And I think that the phrase imposter syndrome is thrown around by a lot of young women, and you seem very sure of yourself as a woman and as a parliamentarian. I would ask you, if you had a piece of advice or wisdom to young women who have that fire burn within them, like that fire burnt within you when that, I won't name them, but when that parliamentarian wasn't there for the apology, women who are experiencing that fire and want to get involved in politics, what would your wisdom be to them?
Well, first I'd say that don't be afraid if you have imposter syndrome. You know, I've had plenty of imposter syndrome in my life too. I certainly have. And really the very, very first few steps I took as a brand new MP, by golly, I asked myself many times, you know, what's a nice girl like you doing in a place like this? You know, how did this happen? Why are you here? But, you know, I think it's like any new job that you take on. You know, once you step into the arena, then you need to put on the shiny bolero and go for the ball. And there are lots of other brilliant people around who will be there to support you. And, you know, I often say to young women who say to me, Helen, you know, gosh, as an independent, you know, that's hard. You haven't got the party around you. And that's true. Every decision that is made, I have to own it myself and make it. But, you know, I really think that when you're a community independent, as I am, that you never walk alone. And I'm, you know, I'm always there to phone a friend. Believe me, like there's so many things I'm not sure of, but I know where to go to find answers. And I think if I could reassure young women that, you know, there are many resources in the Parliament to help you too. There's the most extraordinary library with a whole squad of researchers. And, you know, I come from an academic background. I love research. I love libraries. And, you know, I really make use of that. And those people, good grief, they're so fabulous. You know, I think they must work around the clock. You know, I can send a request to them and next morning I'll have the most extraordinary brief there and they'll come and talk me through it. So I think if you're afraid that you feel like, oh, I don't know enough yet or I haven't had enough experience, don't feel that. I mean, you are a citizen of this nation and you have a role to play in the federal parliament if you choose it. So again, I would say, you know, I spent many years working as a nurse and a midwife and then went into academia. I thought when people were tapping me on the shoulder, I mean, the first thing I said to them is that I haven't got the right experience to be a member of parliament. Well, you know, that's a nonsense. Of course I did. And, of course, every woman listening to this has a life experience, and that's what the House of Representatives is about. It should be about a diversity of experience. It shouldn't be filled with people who've come through a political pathway, you know, that had it stamped on their head from birth. Of course, you have the skills. And if you, you know, you shouldn't, I think you, many of us think it's not the right moment, that I'm not ready yet or my circumstances are such that it's not the right time. Well, again, I would say to you, the right time may never come, but if the opportunity knocks, you should take it there and then.
And if it's not a, I think a lot of people see their route into politics as one of the major political parties or the Greens or, you know, an established party because, you know, you can go online, you can put in your membership form. There are formal things like branch meetings to go to. If you'd like to take the independent path, how did you get involved in your community?
Well, again, it's a lifetime, really. So for me, I've lived and worked in rural and regional Australia pretty much all my life. I had a few years in the city when I first left the family farm. But I think in everything that you do, like not everyone's going to run for parliament, of course they're not, but there's ways that you can participate in your democracy wherever you are and whatever you do. So I encourage people, though, who are interested in becoming an MP to get engaged in your community as much as you can. Do lots of volunteering. Join those community groups that are important to you, that you have a real passion and interest in, and get yourself some leadership training. I think that if you step into the ring again in a community group, find yourself some good mentors and start to take positions on the committee and get used to chairing a meeting, get used to making decisions like that. I think if you can do formal leadership training, that's really helpful. I know I did. It was really helpful. I also, and again, this was way before I ever thought I was going to be an MP. I also, I did company director training as well, and because I was a board director on several not-for-profit boards. So, again, that kind of formal training is really, really helpful if in fact you do end up becoming a member of parliament. Things like Pathways to Politics, of course, extraordinary program that is all about encouraging women to throw their hat in the ring.
We love practical advice, and I have loved speaking to you today. Thank you so much for joining me, Helen, and I'm going to let you get prepped for Rotary.
Yeah, thanks so much, Alicia. I better do some quick notes about, but they're always a great audience, you know, and for me, they usually say, oh, we want you to talk for half an hour, but I never do. I talk for 15 minutes and then say, okay, it's officially question time. You can ask me anything you like. So we always have a great conversation.
That's the way to do it. Thank you so much for joining me, Helen. I really appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure, Alicia, and all the very best to you.
I'm sure I'll bump into you in Canberra someday.
I hope so. I hope so. All right.
See you later. Bye. In the House and in the Senate is recorded on the land of the Whadjuk people. This land was never ceded. It always was and always will be Aboriginal land. If you enjoyed this episode of In the House and in the Senate, please jump into your podcast app, subscribe and give me a quick rating and review. This will help the podcast reach more people and I will personally be incredibly grateful. Also, be sure to head over to the podcast Instagram at In the House in the Senate, where I'll be sharing content from our guests, throwbacks to my time in staffing, and resources to help you get more involved in the political system. You can also follow my personal account at alicia.aikenradburn. Thanks for listening and speak to you next week.
Bye-bye. Goodbye to you. Bye.
Next question.